Welcome to Training Unleashed, the show that will help you design and deliver training that's off the chain and will make a difference. Now, here's your host, Evan Hackel.
Hello, everyone, to what I think is going to be one of the best Training Unleashed episodes ever. Have an amazing guest. Her name is Kimberly Kaimanmen Lee. And what's amazing about her is she spent 20 years with GE in leadership training at their headquarters for quite a bit of that time doing senior management executive leadership training. And I think anybody that knows anything about GE knows this, their university is one of the best corporate universities in the world. Before we get started, I do want to shout out to my friends at the C-Suite, TV and radio for all of your support on the show. Kimberly, why don't we, because I don't normally do this, but I just think it'd be fascinating. Just talk about the culture at GE around training and why it was so important. Because I think people need to understand, from my perspective, culture is king and having a culture of training is amazing. And I know GE really embraced that. Maybe if you could talk about that, that'd be wonderful.
That's great. Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on your podcast, Evan. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you. So you're right, GE's culture around learning and development was bar none, top of its game. So a couple things about their culture with regard to learning and development. First is they believe in a leader in every chair. And the goal there is to make sure that no matter what your role is, you have a responsibility to lead in it and make sure that everything you do comes from a place of betterment, moving the company forward, and helping lift your colleagues up to a better place. The second is they felt a true responsibility to make sure that leaders had the skills they needed to do well and right, no matter where they were in their career journey. So they invested in it. At one point, I think we calculated over $1 billion worth of investment in both functional and leadership learning and development. So it comes at every phase, every stage, and every need in a leader's journey. So without a doubt, especially with the creation of GE Crotonville, which is their corporate university, started in 1956, they believed not only in the concept of leadership learning and development, but having a place for leaders to gather to do that great work.
I believe in training. I mean, anybody who listens to this podcast knows I believe in training. I really think it's the difference for the success, long-term success of businesses, and to invest in people and to invest in leadership. I think it makes an amazing difference. But the real thing that I want to talk about today is experiential learning. And I'm a big believer in it. I don't think enough people do it. I know GE does it really well. And I know that your company, that's what you're all about, is experiential training. So why don't we just start, because I like to do this, with what does it mean when you say the words experiential training, just so that everybody has a common understanding, because what it means to me might be different than what it means to you versus different to what it means to our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely right. So experiential learning to me is you put the learner in the center of the skill or behavior you're trying to get them to adopt. So it's less telling, more doing. Less doing, more feeling, being, and those sorts of things. So the more you can get them to emote, I think emotion moves the body. So they need to attach themselves to the very thing you want them to be able to do longer term within the company. So if you want them to be more compassionate and empathetic to their customer, you need to put them into a situation that helps them to adopt that. If you want them to understand what it means to be a servant leader, you need to have them serve, literally serve. We can talk about a couple of ways we've had our participants and certainly some of the experiences that I had when I was at GE as well. So it's literally putting them in the center of the behavior or skill you want them to actually adopt.
And, you know, it makes complete sense to me that this is the best way for people to learn, is to be immersed in it, because you can read, you can, you know, you can do a lot of situational analysis and e-learning and things of that nature, but it's very different than to like have that emotional experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love the servant leadership, big believer in servant leadership. Why don't you just take a moment and describe how that would work? How, you know, if somebody wanted to do that kind of experiential experience, what would that look like? Maybe like a little case study.
Sure. So we start with, what are you solving for, right? And I think that, you know, you could call it whatever you'd want in terms of your design and development of the approach. So oftentimes, if servant leadership or just this concept of serving is something that the company or culture wants to ensure their leaders are astute at, we would actually thread a component like that throughout a learning opportunity. So it might not be the core focus, but it would be something that is experienced throughout a three-day workshop, for example. Here's a couple ways we do that. One, I'm a big fan of leaders doing chores. Now, again, I work with more mid-leadership and above. So oftentimes, by the time you get to be a senior leader, you are being served. So someone makes the reservation for you. Someone has the table set for you. Someone has the meeting coordinated for you. The plane is reserved for you. All of those sorts of things are done for you. So we switch it up a bit. And instead, we have what I call the equivalent of chores. So if I'm hosting a senior leadership team for a three-day workshop, I ensure that one of those days is reserved for lunch on site, and it's catered. And the only thing that is done for them is the food is delivered to the site. They each then, on the back of their name tag, might have a task that's assigned to them, which they won't know about until they're told to turn over their name tag. And it could be everything from set the table, serve water to your colleagues, clear the table, you name it. And it's just a touch of, are you willing to do what it takes to make those around you comfortable? So that's one example of how we've done it.
Well, first, let me compliment you, because one of my fears was that every example you were going to give was going to be so big and so difficult that no one could tangibly think about it. You could take any meeting anybody has that's live, and we're now having live meetings again, and take that exercise and make it happen. So that, thank you for that share.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it, Evan, is about being ready at hand, right? A lot of that, to your point about it, doesn't need to be big and grandiose. Being ready at hand means when you're in a meeting and you see somebody struggling with the projector, if you know how to fix that, jump in. It doesn't matter your level, your role, your responsibility in that meeting. What matters is that you help keep progress moving. And oftentimes folks forget that that is, in essence, a big part of servant leadership.
You know, it'd be interesting. Maybe we'll do another episode sometime on servant leadership, but that's not the purpose of this. But I feel myself gravitating
toward that topic right now. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it is. And, you know, I think that leadership, that skill, is going to become more and more important as the younger generations become bigger and bigger parts of the workforce.
That's right.
So, you know, I like to joke, I grew up with Bewitched, where Darren was always afraid of Larry, and the leadership was fear. I'm going to fire you, do what I say. And that today does not cut it. So let's just take a moment, because I know you do some really interesting offsite stuff. Just tell us about that and how that works, and what that experience is like.
Sure. So it started actually when I was at GE. We found that when I first started in that role, I was at GE for 20 years and 7 years at GE Crotonville. And when I first started at GE Crotonville, a lot of what we did was lecture-based, especially for the senior leadership group. We wanted to transmit knowledge, expose them to new and different ways of leading and strategizing, and again, exposure to businesses. All of that is terrific. But what we found was that it didn't change behavior as much as we wanted. So after observing a couple of those classes, I thought, I wonder if there's a way to get the same lesson, but with a different approach. So we ended up letting a lot of our academic partners go for a while and said, I think we're going to try this without the lecture. And if anything, make it a lecturette. So we tried to get to the point where there were no more than kind of 30-minute lectures of any new content. And then the rest would be something that they'd have to apply the learning to or toward. So as we started down that road, we found that there were a whole bunch of different ways to explain leadership by using metaphors for it. So for example, I do a lot of work with my clients right now with horses. So horses are the second most intuitive being, as it said, and they are a terrific way to see your leadership loud and clear. And in essence, we would bring leaders together with horses at a horse farm or barn or rodeo space. We've done it in a number of different locations. We work with a terrific gal who leads all of this learning. She will put you for the very first exercise inside of a stable with a horse, and she'll say, have the horse do something you want it to do. Typical leadership behavior, right? So folks will stall for a while, and then you'll see them do a bunch of things. You'll see them try to pull on the reins, talk nicely to the horse and in English, and try to explain what they want to do. Some dangerously will try to push from behind to get them to move. And Colette, the gal that we partner with, says, look, the horse desperately wants to follow you. She just doesn't necessarily know what you want her to do. And then that, in essence, opens up the whole dialogue around how are you as a leader of people then? Do they desperately want to follow you? They just don't know exactly what you want them to do. So that would just be one example of experiential learning, but we've taken folks to Normandy and studied World War II, specifically communication and chaos theory around what do you do? How do you lead when your leader's not there? How do you just step into that role? We've taken people to Silicon Valley and helped them understand entrepreneurialism, design thinking, being customer-centric, human-centered design. We've taken folks to Gettysburg to understand, again, leadership through the eyes of Abraham Lincoln and some of the change management that he had to handle in a very unsophisticated way to make a huge difference. So taking people to a destination, and the destination, oh, by the way, could be your office, and have them experience something would be, I think, one of the best ways to learn.
Well, I love what you're doing, because when you take people out of their normal environment, it's natural for them to become more curious and open-minded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I find when I do training in offices, people are more likely to want to rush on a break to catch up on email or call somebody, and yeah, you know, everyone's head isn't really in the game. But when you take them off site, it makes a difference. It definitely makes a difference.
It does, but we know, Evan, to your point, it might not be always financially possible, right, to do that. And that tends to be when I work with middle managers and above, they tend to have a bit more of a budget, if you will, for those sorts of experiences. I get that. But there are things you can do within your office. So, for example, I work with a group where they were really having a difficult time getting their employees to just jump in, right, to figure it out, if you will, and know that their role is to do whatever it takes, as opposed to just being told what to do. So we said, okay, then we have to do things differently. So in their case, we took all of the tables and chairs, something we did at GE, took all the tables and chairs and had them all piled upon one another. And this was Monday morning, first thing they're walking into their classroom in the corporate office. And of course, this is not how they expected to start their class, right? They expected things to be ready for them. Table set, paper, workbook, you know, display on the screen, et cetera, et cetera. And there was no instructor. It was just the participants coming in one by one. And we were outside looking through the windows with our cup of coffee, watching what they would do without instruction. without a teacher, without a trainer, without a note written on the board. And some just stood waiting for help to arrive. Others, you know, got frustrated and angry about, oh, great, we're going to start late, that sort of thing. And others took it upon themselves to make sense and order of the room, knowing that the sooner they did that, the more they could get on with the agenda of the day. And those were the kind of leaders this particular client was looking for. So what we did was spent the next 30 minutes debriefing that one simple activity, and not only how to be a servant leader, that is part of it, right? You make sure things are ready for your peers, your guests, your hosts, your employees. The other part is, why are you waiting for instruction? This was something you could have handled without me telling you. So again, the lesson, we know it, right? We were taught this stuff as kids, but I think a lot of what we do as adult learning professionals is a lot of reminding. I find myself doing a lot of reminding rather than really teaching something that's new or novel.
Now, it's interesting as you say this. I did a thing back in December, a workshop on embracing the unknown, you know, how to survive in a chaos world. Uh-huh. And I racked my brain, because I'm going to do this virtually, how do I start this off in a way that could actually be an example of the unknown and a chaotic world? So I started, it was a 2.5 hour workshop, but I started the workshop for the first 15 minutes with just a slide saying, what's the unknown mean to you? And I wasn't there. I mean, I was literally there because I was watching, but I wasn't on screen. I did not give any direction. It was just that slide. And there were about 70 people in the audience. And, you know, one person actually left.
I believe it.
But it was interesting because it became a robust discussion. After about 5 minutes of people kind of like figuring out, well, how does this work? Who speaks when? But then they just erupted. It was amazing and a great debrief.
And Evan, what a great opportunity for those learners to understand their own behavior against what you were trying to teach them. You could have lectured that skill, that session, if you will, and they would have taken notes and had a step sequence and, you know, had great examples from, you know, history and so forth. But instead, you gave them an opportunity, an experiential opportunity, to test their own behavior against a set of skills that, quite frankly, they were probably already taught. So there's another activity. Can I give you another example of
something? I think it's great. Before you do, though, I just want to comment.
Yes.
I think the theme that's coming out here is, with a little thought, it's not that hard to do experiential learning.
Oh, yeah.
And so let's keep going. I love you to share your next
thing. Yes, for sure. And that tends to be, quite frankly, why I'm hired. It's to just start to get people thinking differently about learning and development. So,
interested in Tortle's learning management system? Why not try it for free today? Tortle is offering a free LMS for up to 25 users. With Tortle's easy-to-use self-authoring tool and free quick start guide, you'll have courses up in no time. Sign up today and you'll experience one of the easiest-to-use LMSs in the marketplace today. To learn more, visit tortle.com/LMS.
Here's another example. This one I did. This was probably our most successful segment of all the courses that we did at GE during the time that I was there. We had a similar challenge with our leaders, such smart, brilliant, brilliant talent, very ambitious, all of the things that you've probably read and heard about GE folks, but they were also very respectful of the hierarchy, which many companies are. We were pseudo military hierarchy of sorts, and we had command and control and, you know, all of the things that you talked about earlier in our time together. So our goal was to really help people realize that there's a place and time for that, but that should not be the overarching way that you engage with your peers and your leaders. Instead, we want you to lead in every possible way. So we found that they were good soldiers. We needed them to be good generals, in essence. So we thought, okay, how do we figure that out? How do we help them to understand that in a different way? So here's what we ended up doing. Instead of bringing them to GE Crotonville, which is actually a campus in New York, we said, let's switch it up. We usually bring them to Manhattan for a couple days, we're going to start their training in Manhattan. So this first thing will then get them off kilter a little bit. So they're probably going to assume that all of the people in their class are going to be in the same hotel. Nope, we spread them across 8 different hotels in Manhattan. And then we thought they'd probably think they were going to be going to a conference room Monday morning, 8 o'clock. And we said, no, let's not do it in conference room Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Let's really switch it up. So here was their activity. They were given a text message upon their arrival at the hotel. And when they checked into their hotel room, there was a baseball hat with a GE emblem on it with a little card from me. And it said, you will get a text message at 7:45 a.m. with instruction on how to start your class. That's the only thing they were given. There's no agenda, no additional detail. So at 7:45, they were given a text message instruction from me, from my team. And it said, you have 1 hour to find 9 other people with the same hat and emblem, GE emblem, as you. And then additional instruction will be given on what to do next. So somewhere in the city of Manhattan, they had 1 hour to find 9 other people with the same hat as theirs. So of course, panic sets in, right? How do I go about
doing that? Yeah, no idea. You would have no idea where to start.
So they're thinking, well, they must all be in this hotel somewhere, right? Well, that wasn't the case. So there was only 2 requirements, 1 hour, same hat, that's it. So I'm sitting in the lobby with a proverbial newspaper, 2 holes, watching what's going to happen in that particular hotel room. My staff was strewn about the other hotel rooms. So we find people coming down to the lobby and they see a couple other GE people because they had the hat with the emblem, but it was the wrong color. So first decision point, do I hang out with these people, even though they're not the instructions, or do I go about my own and try to find people? So some choose to hang together. Others chose to go out on their own because they thought they'd be saving time. Now, do I guess where would people go if they had to find a bunch of other people? Where would be the big landmarks? Do I ask for help? Do I wait? Do I watch? Do I try to get creative? So we had some people go to the hotel to get a list of all the GE people who checked in, right? Which the hotel is not supposed to give out, but we give them 10 points for creativity. Others, IT people, tried to crack the code on who the distribution list was in the text message. And we tried to keep it stealth on purpose. So again, love the creativity. In the end, an hour later, we sent a text message saying, we want you to meet us at this Broadway theater, emptied and out for rent to us, start class. So as they found their group, they would come to this Broadway theater and they'd start to fill in. And we'd say, do you have your whole group? No, we could find everybody but 2 people. Oh, okay. Do you have your whole group? No, I couldn't find anybody. I'm all by myself. So me collecting all of these data points for the debrief. So finally, we get everybody in. We start the debrief about, hey, look, we need your leadership. We have enough soldiers. We need your leadership. You're here because you're high potential. You're the future of the company. We need you to start doing that now. So let's debrief how this activity went. And that's when we start to find out all the creativity that they put forth. Well, we have our one sole person comes in one particular class, all by herself. She's late, about 20 minutes late. She sits down. We're in the midst of the debrief. I paused and I said, would you mind if I asked you a few questions about how that went for you? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, what was the approach you took, to try to find your 9 other people? And she said, well, I decided to just sit in a Starbucks window and watch as people went by. And if I saw anybody with my hat and my color hat, I would jump out and tag along with them. That was her approach. And she would have been sitting there for a very long time had there not been another text message to get her back to the rest of the group. So we had a long talk about if you were to sit and wait for instruction or a sign or what have you in your day job, how long would you have to wait before you would get the right answer? So there were all sorts of metaphors you could use to really teach the lesson, but that became one of the most powerful starts to a program. And we ran that one for about a little over 2 years. So it's still and they were sworn to secrecy. They couldn't tell any future student what would happen. Otherwise, of course, the gig would
be. It would be destroyed.
Yeah.
I'd want to go find a hat manufacturer quickly.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I'm
just joking. We're going to run out of time, but I want to ask one question here, because sure. I think this is important, like to know. Do you use case studies much?
Sure, for training, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, but only to the extent where it can be applied to what they're doing. So if it's something we can bring to life, would love to do that. But if it's a case study that would guide their learning in what they're currently doing, absolutely we do.
Yeah, I've personally had a lot of success with case studies, you know, to get people to, you know, really think out of the box. You know, sometimes hard to find the right one.
Yes. And the case studies I tend to use, quite frankly, Evan, come from magazine articles. They might not be industry similar, and they might not necessarily be topic similar. It's really more about decision-making or thought processes, experience, that sort of thing that I pull in.
I gotta share this because I did not ever think about this. But when I was getting my MBA, my favorite teacher was my economics teacher. And you would come into the class and there would be a Xerox copy of a Wall Street Journal article. And he'd say, everyone read this and I want to know how economics applies to this article.
Oh, and, fascinating.
And, you know, you would read it and, you know, a lot of people had different opinions, but to bring a robust conversation to a, you know, to making economics practical.
Yes.
And that really, really, you know, made the class a lot of fun. And yeah. I think more effective.
And,
very, very simple. Okay. This has been great. I'd love people to know a little bit about your company, the kinds of people you like to work with, and then after that, we'll get into your offer.
Sure. So my company, it's Kimberly Kleiman Lee. You can find all the details you need at KimberlyKleimanLee.com. So Kimberly Kleiman Lee, it's K-I-M-B-E-R-L-Y, Kleiman Lee, K-L-E-I-M-A-N-L-E-E, and that's KimberlyKleimanLee.com. And we focus on three things, really. So first, we focus on executive assessments and coaching. So we do a lot of that, specifically to mid-manager and above. And we focus on performance enhancements and improvements, of course. Second is facilitation of teams and teamwork. So we work on curating experiences for teams that help them become healthier and more productive. And then the third is all around design and development. We do a combination of strategy work to help learning and development folks enhance their learning strategies. And then, of course, the design and development that goes with the content to support that strategy.
I would imagine it'd be a lot of fun just talking to you about the possibilities of how one could put together different solutions and working together. I really appreciate when you talk about the assessments and the personalities, because I think that's an important experiential thing, just to learn about yourself and to learn about the people you're interacting with. And one of the things that actually helped me in my career was when I discovered that not everyone thinks just like I do. Amazing.
Took me a while to learn that lesson as well, Evan. Yes.
I know you have a nice offer, and if you would, you know, please share that with everyone, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these days everyone's struggling with time and how to manage their time better. So, for those folks who are interested, you're welcome to go to KimberlyKleimanLee.com. Again, that's KimberlyKleimanLee.com/time, T-I-M-E, and you can sign up for Manage Time in 10. It's a great learning aid to help you understand the top 10 ways you can think about time in a very different way and maximize the time that you do have available.
Sounds like a great thing. And it actually, I think time and time management today has become more and more important. Because when you work at home, things are different. And right. with Zoom, so many meetings, and I know, in fact, this happened with you, is that this recording was back to back with another meeting. And if you don't have good time management skills, you can't handle all these things well. So I think it's a great offer. As you know, Kimberly, we always end the show with, if I had one tip to share with the audience, what would that be? And I'd love to hear your tip.
If I had one tip to share with my learning brothers and sisters, so to speak, it would be really focus on the whole human. I think we found, especially in light of this pandemic, that the whole human has been brought to work. And it goes along with one of my favorite quotes. It's okay if you leave your work at work, but it's a shame if you leave yourself at home. And when it comes to learning and development, the more you focus on the whole human, the more you're going to have the right person coming to work and a healthy person being shipped back home upon the day's end.
It's a great tip. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for being a great guest.
Training Unleashed is brought to you by Total Training, specializing in e-learning and interactive online training solutions.
Remind everyone, please check out TrainingUnleashed.net,
nonprofit, and franchise organizations.
To see other episodes,
Total makes effective training easy. Just go to Total.net to gain access to real-world tools that can make a difference. That's Total.net.
Participate with other listeners as we discuss interesting books around leadership and learning and management. Everyone have a great day.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.